Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I've got two super talented filmmakers with me, and we're on Zoom. I've got Alyssa Thordeson and Claire Cooney. Hello, you two.
Hello.
Hi.
We just spent, I don't even know how long, because Zoom doesn't give you a running time, but we just had a wonderful interview podcast about the film that these two collaborated on called After a Love Story. And here comes the praise. It's fucking amazing. It's just one of the best dramas I've seen in years. And to prove it, it was at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in November 2022, so not long ago, because I caught you right at the end of your festival circuit, so that when you got the email at the end of the festival saying, hey, when you're ready to release your short, feel free to do this podcast if you want. And you were like, we're ready. And I was like, whoa, that was fast. But that's because we caught you at the end of your run.
Exactly.
And at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival, After a Love Story took home. I'm going to do it quicker this time. If you want to hear an extensive list, listen to the podcast before this, where it's a nice long interview with these two talented people. But Grand Jury Award for Best Film, Best Lead Actor, Best Performance by a Cast, Best Screenplay for Alyssa, and then the Filmmakers Award, which is given out by your peers who were filmmakers from previous, gave outstanding performance for an individual to Alyssa. So 5-6 awards, and you got more awards. You had an amazing festival run, played at Oscar qualifying festivals, which, you know, I didn't even say this in the last podcast, but it breaks my heart every Oscar season to see the nominees for Best Live Action Short and know that I've seen, normally there's one of the five that I think is better than what I've seen at our festivals. And I know from the direct experience of many people, is it's just if you have a deep wallet and you hire the right publicist.
Right,
there are publicists who make a living promoting films, not to the public, but to Academy qualifying people. So if you don't have an extra, I don't know if it's 10 grand, 20 grand, 30 grand.
It's a ton. That's a ton. We were approached by one of the larger publicity firms that I know they do a lot of Academy qualifying films, and it was more than the budget of our film.
But who is surprised that the Oscars are not a meritocracy? So anyway, but that's my way of saying I think your film should totally be shortlisted on that list, but it's based on merit plus paying the right people the right amount of money, because because that's the only way to get noticed when there are probably 5-10,000 shorts made a year. I can't believe that they pretend to have an Oscar category for something where they're not even seeing everything.
No. Yeah. You couldn't possibly. Yeah.
That said, I sure as F would love for Sherman Oaks Film Festival to be an Oscar qualifying festival. That's beside the point.
Sure.
I would pretend that then our excellent taste would have an influence, but obviously wouldn't, because I already know it's about the publicist. So anyway, what a stupid tangent to throw into your introduction. This podcast is the Discover Indie Film 4 Questions one, where you two both get to answer three favorite films, an underrated film, an overrated film, and a lesser-known film that people should seek out. You both seem so smart and so introspective. I'm very eager to hear your answers. We didn't flip a coin and decide who goes first, but you can both do your favorites and then both do your underrated and both do your over. So take turns and we'll comment on each other and whatnot. So
awesome.
Who wants to jump in?
Go for a little bit.
I'll go. Okay. Yeah. So my favorite film is Heat. Claire texted me a couple weeks ago now, I think.
Yeah.
And I just saw the notification pop up on my phone before I even saw the screenshot. And it just said, don't you love this movie? And I was like, I knew it was Heat before I saw the screenshot. Yes, it's a perfect film. It's 3 hours long. You couldn't cut off a second of it. It's really just the best example of telling a story with very little exposition, because you don't need very much. So much of giving the audience only what we need to know so we can fill in the rest. Every single character being so fleshed out. I mean, like, Dennis Haysbert has 3 minutes maybe total of screen time, and he's so memorable. But that's every single actor in this film. Tom Hooper, like John Boy, everybody. I just I could talk about it all day long. I think it's flawless, and I never get tired of watching it. And I love to talk about it with people who think, like, isn't that a weird like 90s bank robber movie? And I'm like, it's Michael Mann, and it's Pacino and De Niro at their best, and Amy Brenneman, who made what could have been a throwaway role super memorable. I just love everything about it.
It's an excellent film. It just is. Yeah. Like you said, I don't even think of it as a heist movie.
No, I mean, it really
I see
isn't.
It as like about... it's just like epic American cinema.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You got two more?
Yeah, I'm going to cheat a little bit because I'm going to say that Lord of the Rings is one. but that was like, you know, really, it was the first thing that when I was a kid, I think the first one came out when I was in like seventh grade, maybe 2001. And it just, the world building just absolutely blew my mind. And I already knew that I wanted to be an actor and I wanted to do this, but just I don't think I had fully understood the scope of possibility and the fact that they all hold up perfectly now. You can't say that of a lot of films even that were made in the last decade. So I'm going to ride or die for Peter Jackson forever. And probably my third one, this is going to change, you know, depending on my mood, and you're going to laugh because they're so disparate, but probably a tie between Casino and the 2005 Joe Wright Pride and Prejudice.
That's on my list too, Alyssa. That's on my top three too.
See? Okay. Yeah. See? yeah, just in terms of like just pure storytelling and atmosphere and world building and design and acting without, I mean, I think about Sharon Stone in that movie, in Casino, like daily. What she did in that movie was really brave and really interesting. And, you know, Scorsese, of course, if you know, gets a great performance out of everybody, but I think she's just truly great.
Okay. Absolutely. I want to add in, I love that you put in Lord of the Rings trilogy as, because it is one piece. It is, right?
I think so.
But I think it's perfect, but I also think I credit it with, it represented a transition in Hollywood from adaptation is we're going to rewrite it and make it a movie. And Peter Jackson, like he had the novels on the script on the set, I believe. He would like mm-hmm. read the section of the book. Like it taught the world that you can be faithful to the source material and it'll still be good. You don't have to like take shortcuts and cut things out.
Well, and he also had Christopher Lee on set, who was the only person in that cast who had actually met and spoken with Tolkien and wouldn't let him get away with a whole lot. And I know that, you know, there were some necessary adjustments made because it's, you're looking at thousands of pages of material, but it doesn't sacrifice the integrity of the story at all, which is, I think, really difficult to do.
For sure. Yeah, obviously the book has lots of long songs and stuff. Obviously you're not going to have like songs in it. But anyway, wonderful choices for sure. And now it's Clara's turn.
All right. My favorite movie is High Fidelity. I love that movie so much. I don't know even exactly why. It just like lives in my veins. Like I've seen it so many times. It's like I watch it every year actually with my family. This is really weird actually. We watch it the day after Christmas because we're all like Christmas movied out. We want to watch something that's like not Christmassy, but we want to watch like a favorite movie, and we watch High Fidelity. It's just so funny. I love all the scenes of Chicago. Has such a kick-ass soundtrack. Has the most quotable lines in the world. It's just pure entertainment, and it's also just a romance. And I love the way that it. It's a realistic romance. Like speaking of like, you know, things not being over the top and like Hollywood-y, I think at the end the lead character, the lead woman says, you know, she's gone through a trauma. Her dad has died, and she says, I'm too tired. I'm too tired not to be with you. And I know that that could be seen as like settling or like negative. I think it's kind of beautiful. I think that sometimes we put each other through hell in relationships and we hold grudges and things like that. But then when the shit hits the fan, like the people that are really important to you come out of the woodwork. And so I think that that was just really beautiful. I don't know. I love it. It's a great movie. If you haven't seen it, I recommend.
Read the book? I've actually, people have told me that the book is one of the best books they've ever read.
This is a major shame I'm going to put out in the world right now. I am not a voracious reader. I have a problem where when I'm done with a long day, the idea of reading a book is like exhausting to me. So I'll end up watching a show, or I'll end up be like doing my laundry and halfway watching a show, and I'll read like 5 pages of a book to fall asleep, and that's about it. And also I read a lot of scripts in my life, and so my eyes sometimes are like done. But it is definitely a source of shame for me, because I do know it's one of the healthier things a human can do to leave their own brain is to read a book. So it has been on my shelf, and I'm about 2 chapters in, and that's been the case for like a year and a half now. So it is on my to read list.
I've also got shame because I've been told that it's one of the best books I'll ever read. And I guess it's been about 20 years and I still haven't gotten to it.
I can see it from where I am right now on my bookshelf. So I'll get after it now that I've been talking about it on a podcast. Now I have to do it.
Oh, podcasts are for real, man. All right.
I know. Serious business. And then, I mean, I don't really have a top three. I know that like that's my favorite. After that, it goes into like a list of like 7 that are all tied. So I'll just pick 2. Mm-hmm. One is definitely Pride and Prejudice with my girl Kira. It's just beautiful. The music is spectacular. The way things are blocked, the camera movements, the unbelievable scenery and costumes and all that stuff is just beautiful, and the acting's fantastic. It's like a comfort film. Like if that's on TV, I will watch it every time. I love
Claire,
it.
Have you seen? Sorry, I'm going to sidetrack this, but have you watched the commentary with Jill Wright on that film?
No, because I don't have the like box set. I don't know how to find the commentary.
Well, it's just on the DVD. I don't know. There's like a special feature. It doesn't matter, but it's so great because it was so educational to me when I was thinking about making films. But he's talking about things like the blocking and like Judi Dench anchoring a shot with just like the smallest movement, and like just the attention to detail is so great. And I think you would love it.
That's amazing. I mean, I would like for more filmmakers to have some kind of like in-depth behind the scenes accompanying every film they make, because I'm always so curious and like, how did that camera movement, what were they using a crane for that? Were they like, I'm very interested in the mechanical, how did you achieve what I'm seeing on the screen? And it's rare to find a doc that kind of handles that well. And so that's good to know. I'll just try to track that down. And then, in third position, I mean, it's a tie between a lot of things. You've Got Mail's a fave of mine if we're talking rom-coms, but I think I'm going to go ahead and talk about Spotlight. Spotlight is one of my favorite films. It's just gorgeous. I mean, I love films like that where it's like a kind of a thriller and it's either in a newsroom or something like that. And the stakes are so high, but it's all these like intellectual do-gooder people on screen. I love it. It also just talks about such an important topic. Rachel McAdams is brilliant in that. I mean, the whole cast in that is absolutely brilliant. And again, that's one of those films where I've watched a bunch to see the blocking and the camera movement, all that kind of stuff. Like it's a beautiful film, and it takes, I know a film's really good when I'm sitting down to watch it for the 3rd or 4th time and I'm thinking to myself, watch it for the camera movements, watch it for the technical stuff. And then I forget to do that and I start just watching the movie. That's how you know it's a really good movie. So, yeah.
Absolutely. I'll add that I loved that you both mentioned Pride and Prejudice, but I love that Claire threw an extra praise to Keira Knightley.
Yeah, she's
great. Because I don't know why. I feel like she's so underrated, and she's made so many great indie films. She's made films with almost, you can tell they're low budget things that she just read and said, this is so good, I'm going to lend my name to it.
Yeah.
And she's also, I have a lot of respect for her too, because she comes from a family of like theater people. Like her dad, I saw an interview one time where she was talking about her dad was an actor, but he drove a cab, and her mom was a playwright, but she, you know, worked in retail. And so she had this expectation when becoming an actor that she was going to have this very like blue collar existence and just make things that she really cared about, and somehow got the dream. And so I love that perspective. And I think she's so charming. I think she's great in everything, and anybody who disagrees can kick rocks.
Agreed. And Spotlight, such a great film.
Yeah.
I watched Mark Ruffalo read the phone book.
Oh yeah. I got so excited when that won the Academy Award. And that was kind of like, I don't think it was the favorite to win that year. And I remember just being like, yes. Oh my God. You know, like just, it's exciting when a film you actually really enjoy, even though it's all bullshit, awards are bullshit. It can be really fun when something you really enjoy gets wide recognition and all that. So yeah.
It's great. Yeah, because it's so rare. The Oscar always goes to something that doesn't quite deserve it.
Always.
So, even when it goes to a film you love, you're like, why'd it go to that one? The other one was better. So anyway. Alyssa went first for favorites. So now I think Claire should go first for underrated.
Okay. I'm going to go with Clue.
I almost said Clue for this too.
Really? I think we have very similar tastes in that kind of stuff. Yeah. I'm obsessed with the movie Clue. I watch it every year around like Halloween. And quite often I'm the first person that like makes a bunch of people watch the film. Like I think it's more culty than I realized. Like not everyone's seen this film. And I'm like, Tim Curry, are you fucking kidding me? You haven't seen this film. But it's just the best. It's so funny. It's spooky. It's kind of scary, but not in a way that's going to like horrify you at all. It's just, it's like the definition of camp. It's delightful. It's so well acted. And again, like Tim Curry at his best, like it's just the best. And I think it's thought of as like a lame movie. It's so good. It's so funny and so, so good. So if you're ever looking for a kind of a fun, spooky murder mystery to watch, check out Clue. It's great.
Clue has been on some people's top three.
Yeah. I love it.
It's making a comeback.
Good.
And I don't even remember. I forget. Like now that it's in the streaming world, like do they stream it and then you get to see all the endings at once?
Yes, you see them all at once.
Okay, good. I was gonna say I haven't watched it on streaming because I have the DVD and you just choose which one. But I also like what a genius thing. I know. I want my physical media because like HBO can just decide that they don't want to have it anymore, and then I've been paying for it, and now I don't have it. I want to own
it. That's true.
But. Like in 85 to be like, we're just going to theatrically release three different endings and not tell anyone. Like genius.
Iconic. Yeah.
Genius.
Absolutely.
Was that your film too, Alyssa?
That we're talking underrated, right?
Yeah.
That was one of my two.
Okay.
So the one that I'll say is The Sound of Metal. Which I know was a big like awards darling, I guess, but I still don't think enough people have seen it. And I don't think it got the recognition that it deserves. That film actually was what made me sit down and write the first draft of After. Because it was so, I watched it and I sat, you know, maybe in silence for what felt like a long time, but probably wasn't that long. And I said, I have to make something. And it was my script, but the way that they use sensory detail to tell that story, you don't get in a lot of film or really any media. The way that you feel the absence of sensory detail so much, the way that, you know, relationship doesn't go the way you think it's going to, even though they love each other. You know, there was so much in that film and so much in those performances that just, I think it's flawless. I think it's so well made and it's truly made with such depth and such heart And they also shot that thing chronologically so that they could give, you know, the actors the real experience as much as possible. And I think that's insane, but also brilliant.
Sorry, go ahead, Jeff.
No, you go ahead.
We talked about that film when we were prepping for after, because we both did. Were saying we wanted to make sure that there were like certain sounds or tactile things that kind of stuck out and were kind of a form of like mild PTSD, like how certain like sounds can trigger memories. So that was definitely on our mind while we were making our film. I mean, it wasn't as essential to the world of the film as it is for that film, but that was for sure.
But I think it informed it. Yeah. And especially the sense memory and the sense detail was really important to me. And in our script, you know, the main thing is that they are feeling the absence of touch, and we can't telegraph touch the way you can telegraph sound, obviously in a theater, but we can make you feel the absence of it. And it was the sound of metal that inspired that element.
So what I was going to say is that, loyal listeners of the podcast are sick of me talking about Sound of Metal, I think, because it might have won 2 Oscars, but it was completely ignored in my opinion. I thought it was so incredibly, besides being an amazing film and a film we've never seen before, and deafness being dealt with in a way that's, you know, Hollywood never handles, oh my God, I can't think of, because I'm old, I got the word handicapped in my head. I know there's a better term.
Disabilities?
Yes, disabilities. Thank you. Yeah. It handles it. And by the way, like in the least Hollywood way possible, I just think that film is, and Riz didn't win the Best Actor award for that.
No, it was crazy.
I can't swallow that.
No. Well, and another like perfectly bittersweet, ambiguous ending. Like we've watched this guy's life completely fall apart, and now we don't get to see where it's going. And I really sort of mourned that at the end. And yeah. I just loved everything about it.
Yeah. And in the hands of a Hollywood studio, when he was at that program, he just would have stayed with it and ended up happy and signing.
There would have been a montage, like a song that's in majors. Like it would have been an all thing.
It's just, God, that's, I'm so glad you mentioned it. Yes, it's all right. I'll stop because obviously I'm way too into that film. So anyway, overrated. You are both such nice people. I'm going to preface it with what I do for nice people, which is overrated. You're not saying it's a bad film. You're not insulting someone's filmmaking. You could even say maybe you don't like your overrated film, but if you do like, you can like a film and still say, I love this film, but the awards it got, or everyone I meet says, oh, that's my favorite film by X. And I'm like, what are you talking about? That's like their 5th best film. So I believe Alyssa's turn to go first.
This is where I'm going to make some people mad. and I will preface it by saying, like, I think there's a difference between a bad film and a film that doesn't work for me. Those are not necessarily the same thing. But I fucking hated Promising Young Woman. I hated every single second of that turgid wasteland of a film. I just hated it. Nothing at all worked for me at all except the acting, which is like fine. But I think the thesis of that film, and I don't think this was intentional, the thesis of that film is you're always going to be a victim. So what are you going to do about it while still being a victim? And I hated that. It was super cynical while trying to be inspirational, I guess. But I can't imagine being inspired by that. I just hated every single thing about it. I just hated everything. And it made me upset at how many people said that it was like feminist or progressive or helpful to survivors of sexual assault, of which I am one. And I was offended. Like I'm not offended by a lot, but I felt insulted, like personally, by the success of that film.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
I got to lean on Claire to comment now or agree, because I have been, I have not seen it. I actually do all my viewing with my wife at this point in life, like for the last 10 years. And she kept, she just like was like, you know what? I've read the synopsis. I'm going to pass.
Right. I turned to whoever I saw it with and I was like, okay. So I didn't hate it viscerally, but I certainly did not think it was like the edgy, like feminist thing I think it wanted to be. I felt like it was confused in terms of its tone. Like I didn't yeah. know what it was trying to say, and I didn't know what genre or world it was really in. I felt like it was trying to be, I don't know, all the things.
And they advertised it. Yeah, exactly. They advertised it like a revenge comic book movie almost. That was like super stylized and super punchy. And then you watch it and it's like, oh, what she does is like lecture them a little bit and then goes home and then like ultimately has to kill herself. And that's supposed to make some kind of, I was just so mad at everything about it.
Yeah. I think I saw you talking about that and I was like, that's very intriguing. It did feel like a movie that brought out extremes in people. It was either they hated it or they loved it. And I was very much like, it was a movie. It certainly was overrated. The fact that that was up for Academy Awards was crazy.
And won best screenplay. That was offensive to me.
Oh, really? No, I mean, I think a lot of movies that are in the running for the Academy Awards are overrated. Especially the last few years, I've been like, I haven't loved any of these. So, like, really, that's happened to me a lot recently. So, yeah.
I'm with you. And I think the Oscars have an Achilles heel of sorts, which is if there's an Oscar caliber actor in it, like Carey Mulligan is one of our best.
Right.
And if she's in it, if Frances McDormand is in a nice little odd film, all of a sudden it's Oscar bait because Frances equals Oscar. The math, I just wish... you know, it's
going.
The awards are BS, and I shouldn't be mad that, you know, films that don't deserve it get it. But
I know,
you know, and I don't blame the actors for that film at all. And again,
no, it's not the actors' fault. I'm just saying the Academy sees Carey Mulligan and goes, well, this is an Oscar film.
Right.
They see Frances McDormand and go, well, let's just give it Best Picture. I mean, Frances said it's good.
Right. And yeah, there is obviously, like I said, a difference between like, is it bad? I don't know. Did I not like it? Yes.
Right. I don't know about mine. Well, there's one that I'm afraid to say because it's so popular.
You should just say it.
That's the best kind.
Oh God. Okay. I thought it had a lot of value. I enjoyed many parts of it. It's not my kind of movie. Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Fair. I actually finally saw it over the holidays.
Yeah.
And I was holy shit, I love it. I'm going to watch it 10 more times, but I haven't yet.
I wish I had not known anything about it when I went into it. I had very high expectations. I was told it's going to blow my mind. And that's always a danger. So, you know, maybe in a few years I'll rewatch it and be like, oh my God, this was, you know, great. For me, it felt like it was trying to do a lot all at the same time, which is what it is. But I found it like, in terms of like a sensory experience, I found it to be really overwhelming. And I don't know if it's like, if it triggered some anxiety for me or something, but I at points I was like, I'm finding this to be unpleasant to experience. And then some of the comedy didn't work for me. And again, it may have just been my mood, but there were certain times like I think there's something involving like a strap on or something, like something that just didn't work. I wasn't in the right zone. It was trying to do a lot of different ideas and a lot of different genres all at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the point of it, but it didn't fully work for me. But I've never wanted to like yuck people's yum. And I think it's been pretty popular. I mean, after the film, I thought to myself, like, am I crazy? Am I what's wrong with me? What am I missing? You know? And I looked online and it was interesting to read reviews because the majority of the reviews were great. But then there were a couple key reviewers where I was like, oh, okay, all right. My opinion's valid, I guess, you know, like just didn't totally work for me. Yeah. But no, I think it's a masterful thing doing what it is, you know, but yeah.
No, totally fair. I mean, that's the fun thing. I think it's fun when people disagree. In fact,
yes.
A couple nights ago, I had a filmmaking team and they've made like 3 films together. And actually somebody's top 3 favorite was somebody's overrated. And like,
right.
Like it is a subjective medium. I mean, it's art. Not everyone, you know, I can't understand the people who look at the Mona Lisa and don't get it, but I'm like, well, you should look again because it's amazing. But like, if it doesn't work for you, it doesn't work for you.
Right.
And Everything Everywhere All at Once is not the Mona Lisa. In fact, I'm wondering if on multiple viewings, I'll see like, all right, yeah, I mean, you got me the first time, but I'm starting to realize that, yeah, like Matrix style humor.
Thing.
Like,
you know, I think it's a style thing. I didn't see that first movie. What was the one with Daniel Radcliffe that the same directors made?
Swiss Army Man?
I never saw that, but I heard it's also a bit absurd and there's like a lot going on. And so it may just be that style is not fully for me, you know? So, yeah.
I haven't seen it yet, but I'm eager to, because I've heard it's just one long fart joke.
Yes. Yes. And I
that might not be for everyone.
Yeah. Right. Right.
For sure. Yeah. I can tell by your reaction. It's not.
I mean, I love a fart joke, especially if it's in real life and it happens. I mean, you have to laugh at a fart or else what's the point of it? But in general, do I seek it out in my like humor in film? Generally not. No.
I actually believe I wrote a paper. This is sarcasm. I wrote a paper in college about how there's never been a successful fart joke in cinema because farts don't work in cinema. They just don't. Never.
There's actually a short film, I don't know if it's still on Amoletto or if it was, where this corpse was like farting in Morse code. And it worked only because of the people's reactions to what was happening. Like, it wasn't the fart that was funny. It was the environment and like the fact that people were trying to be like really serious and yeah.
Yeah. Well, and Morse code is already, you know, right. Sarcastic, fictional. It's not right. Like, yeah, right. Your mom or dad, you know, hitting you with a funny one. Like, it's different. So anyway, fart jokes are about family. That's a family joke. So anyway, I'll stop talking about farts, although I just revealed too much about myself probably. And we're on the last one, which is lesser known film for people to seek out.
I have a bunch.
Feel free. There's no whistle. I'm not going to blow the whistle and say stop after one.
Okay. So for sure, St. Francis, that's a Chicago film that did really well in the film festival circuit. And it like is the sort of film that should have been able to make it to like the Oscars or something like that, in my opinion, or at least get like a nom for screenplay. And it didn't, because it doesn't have any stars and all that, but it's just absolutely beautiful. So, and all for all these, let me look up where you can find them just so that I'm spreading the good word.
What's that website? There's a website that says it's like watch now. Just watch.
Just watch. Yeah.
Yeah. Justwatch.com will get you to anything.
Exactly. So St. Francis, that's with an ES, and just if to spell out Saint, it's on Canopy. You can rent it on Apple TV, on Amazon. It's just beautiful. It is so funny. I have seen it probably 4 or 5 times, and I cry and laugh every time I see it. It's a great ensemble. It's just a really, really, really good story. I think you will like it if you like things like, Juno, Little Miss Sunshine, Lady Bird. Those are kind of films that come to mind. So I think it's a great film. If you need a new Christmas film, I recommend One Magic Christmas. That is a classic. That was a Disney Channel original movie when it first came out, which is crazy. But it was 1994. And it has the Queen of Christmas movies, Mary Steenburgen or whatever her name is, who's an elf and all that. So, and she's in like a lot of Christmas films. This is her first kind of one. She's the lead of this one, and she's heartbreaking and she's really good. And it's kind of a spin on, It's a Wonderful Life, but not, you have to watch it to see how it's a spin on that, but it's absolutely fantastic. You will cry, but it's great. And it's so well acted. And it's, I just am amazed people don't watch it more. And then eighth grade, Bo Burnham had this awesome feature a few years back. I think he's one of the most brilliant human beings on the planet. So if you haven't seen Eighth Grade, definitely check that out. Elsie Fisher is fantastic in that. That's like her breakout role. And if you have a child that is approaching eighth grade or in eighth grade, it might be actually too triggering, but it's extremely good and beautiful and about the human condition. And I mean, clearly all the things I'm talking about, I'm just like, I love humans and relationships, and those are the things that I like to watch. So yeah. Excellent. Oh, and Alyssa, I have one rec for you. You should watch, if you haven't seen it already, a film called American Animals. It's like this heist movie. It was in festivals like maybe 4 or 5 years ago. It's fantastic. American Animals.
Writing this down.
You can watch it on Prime for free, it looks like. It is so effing good. It's like a thriller about these college kids that try to like rob some art from one of the most like fit, like very famous expensive pieces of art. And I don't know. It's in this lovely film that's based on a true story. So you see the people who actually attempted to do this heist throughout the film. Basically, there's a little of like documentary thrown in there. It's great. So yeah, those are my four films I say to people that need new films to seek out.
Excellent.
Well, I'm going to throw in a little movie called Relative. That Claire has a starring role in, that is a really wonderful ensemble piece that was made here in Chicago by Michael Glover Smith, who I will be making my next short with. And it's just really beautiful and understated and really well acted and heartfelt and a really nice slice of Chicago. Everything about it feels super real, and I have seen it now twice, and I really was deeply affected by it both times. And it's funny also, which is a hard balance to strike. Claire will break your heart. Because in addition to being a great filmmaker, she's a really brilliant actress, and I want people to know that. It is not available online yet because it is currently enjoying an extended theatrical run across the country. There are two upcoming Chicagoland screenings. There's one at the Beloit Film Festival next month. And I don't remember the next couple. You might want to.
Yeah, let me see where it's playing. It's playing. It's playing at Facets in Chicago on January 27th. It's playing in Seattle on January 30th. It's playing in Santa Fe, New Mexico on February 4th. It's playing in Fort Collins, Colorado on the February 10th. Then it's at Chicago again, February 19th, Beloit, March 3rd and 4th, Lake Forest on March 18th. So it's got lots of stuff for the next month and a half, 2 months.
Yeah.
And it sounds like after a run like that, it should hit a streaming service somewhere.
It should.
Yeah. My hope will is that. And the other one that I wanted to mention, I actually just watched yesterday. It's called Everything in the End. It's by Melissa Fitzsimmons. You can rent it on Amazon Prime, and you should. Claire, you would love it, actually. It's just everything awesome that you do. It is about a guy who, in Earth's last days, or what they assume to be Earth's last days due to circumstances that I won't spoil for you, is stranded in a small town in Iceland, which is why I watched it, because my family's Icelandic. And it's just about the connections that he makes with the people that he encounters, and the heartbreak of, what do you say to your children at the end? What do you say to each other? Like, the intimacy of knowing that you're all like experiencing this thing. And I, apparently she made it on just an absolute shoestring budget. It's just stunning. It's really gorgeous.
It looks beautiful. I'm just watching part of the trailer right now.
So you all know Melissa?
I don't know her at all. I saw this. I think I saw it on some, maybe Twitter or something. And I was like, well, I'm going to watch that. That looks good. And I also just like to support female filmmakers. So now, having seen the film, I will ride or die for that girl. I think she's great.
She was at our film festival in like 2017, I think.
Oh, wow.
And
see?
She was the, like the 25th person to do this podcast.
Nice.
And I've always been an unbelievable fan of Melissa Fitzsimmons. And she spells her name M-Y-L-I-S-S-A, I believe. So,
yeah.
Funny that Fitzsimmons is easier to spell than Melissa, thanks to...
Right.
I believe in her podcast, she said, yeah, my mom spelled it wrong. It was kind of funny, but... But yeah, that's amazing. For a second, I was saying, okay, so do you know Melissa? And she told you to submit to our festival, but no.
Mm-mm.
There you go. What are the odds? Mm-hmm. Everything's coming together.
I know, this is wild.
Thank you both so much for your wonderful lists.
Thank
Excellent
you.
Taste. I could ask you to name your social media stuff, but the truth is it'll all be clickable in the show notes if someone wants to follow your social media or go to your websites. If they're like me, as soon as you're listening to a podcast and you hear someone's voice, you start like pulling out your phone and like looking up
stuff.
Yeah,
I do the same thing.
You're like, I want to put a face to this voice. I don't know. That's what I tend to do. But so I will use that to just get us out of here. So this was the Discover Indie Film podcast, a podcast devoted to people who are killing it on the festival circuit. Just the best crop of new filmmakers we've got. If you want to learn more about it, go to discoverindiefilm.com, and on social media, it's at DIFWINS. There is a TV series that was born out of it. It's on Amazon Prime Video. So if you go to Prime Video, hopefully on a big TV, God, don't watch movies on your phone. But I know there's a whole generation that does. So I'll be quiet. I don't want to put them down. I love young people. But go to Prime, the Prime Video app, hopefully on a big TV, type in Discover Indie Film and enjoy wonderful films. I don't know if I should say it, but it broke my heart. Melissa, we couldn't put Melissa's film in it, one of her shorts, because she used a Sex Pistols song. And the way it was done, she couldn't pull it out, like, without spending a ton of money to pull it out.
Yeah.
And, you know, she just had festival rights to the song. And, but she made an amazing coming-of-age film, That Party That One Night, I believe it's called. So you can find that if you go to her website. But anyway, stop talking about Melissa. Wow, I'm such a fanboy. All right, so that's Discover Indie Film. Oh, and please like and subscribe to the podcast and rent and watch the Discover Indie Film TV series on Prime Video and give it 5 fucking stars if you're a nice person. Don't give it less than that, by the way. If you're not nice, just go away. Just go away. It wasn't for you. You don't like indie film. So, you just got to listen to Alyssa Thorderson and Claire Cooney talk about their favorites. They made the film After a Love Story that was at the Sherman Oaks, that took home like 5-6 awards at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. We hold that festival every November, and you can learn about it at ShermanOaksFF.com, and it's at ShermanOaksFF on social media. Sister Festival every June, so the sun's out for that one. Film Invasion Los Angeles, you can learn about it at FilmInvasionLA.com, and it's at FilmInvasionLA on social media. And the last thing to put out into the ether is if you go to watchhitv.com, watch like the thing on your wrist, hitv.com. It's a new smart TV app / streaming service full of superb indie content. I use the word content. Superb indie films that might be even better if you watch them with marijuana. What can I say? I think there's a demand. I feel like it. So anyway, that is all wrapped up. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
It was super fun. And thank you everyone for listening.